The Joe Biden swan song in Chicago. Good morning, Seattle, Puget Sound. Everybody joining us on the stream, listening around the world. I'm in for John Carlson this morning, along with radio legend Mark Christopher. Hi, Mark.
He called in a sick day. Last night?
Yeah, John not feeling well last night, apparently. And so we got the word that John will take the day off. Mark and I will handle it, but we've got a couple of special guests joining us here in just a moment from Chicago at the convention, our KVI Eyes on the Inside, including Young Zach, presented by All Red Heating and Cooling. So we'll get to that here in just a moment. Let me lay out a couple of things for you. In John's absence, I'm his producer, Phil Vandervoort. So thank you for being here. We've got some new stuff, like I said, with Young Zach and KNWN reporter, Northwest News Radio reporter, and host of Politicast, Jeff Pogel, are going to jump on with us here in just a moment. We'll get into some of the Biden speech highlights. And man, if Biden only would have had that energy last night over the course of the last 2 to 3 years, we would be in a completely different spot right now. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, you're going to hear John Carlson go through something that he did on yesterday's show, but that Fox News has now been picking up on since John talked about it. So we'll play you that coming up at the bottom of the hour. Lars Larson will jump on with me here as we round out the hour. Then at 8:30 this morning, you need to be here for an interview involving a Republican state representative from Mason County, Travis Couture. And Travis Couture has, he's going to have an I told you so. And the I told you so is about Governor Inslee administration releasing sex offenders back into the public and releasing them from the special commitment center on McNeil Island, which was dedicated to housing convicted sex offenders. And this all revolves around a new report by the Seattle Times that is finding what is an alarming rate of recidivism of repeat offenses for convicted sex offenders that were released out into the public by Governor Inslee's administration. So that is at 8:34. You got to be here for that because State Rep Travis Couture from Mason County is going to join me to talk about what the Seattle Times has discovered about how often convicted sex offenders released in Washington to community supervision type settings end up reoffending. And another stain for Governor Jay Inslee. So that's at 8:34 this morning. I hope you can be here. Join Mark and I for that conversation at 8:34. Now, let's go to Chicago and say hello to Young Zach and Jeff Pogula from Northwest News Radio. Gentlemen, hello.
Good morning, Phil.
So, late night last night, early morning for you guys. This is the thankless world of news radio or talk radio or covering news events. Do we want to start off with Jeff and some thoughts on what happened with Biden's speech? The big kind of characterization is how everything ran so late last night. Was it just because of they were trying to jam in too many speakers? I've heard one explanation, you know, everyone applauds and it stretches out the amount of time that they intended for somebody to speak. And then everything gets delayed and delayed and delayed. And before you know it, it's after midnight and Joe Biden is just getting underway with his speech. Midnight Eastern time.
Yeah, it's certainly the delay was a big story last night. I mean, typically in these conventions, they want to be done out by the 11 o'clock p.m. news on the East Coast.
Bingo.
Well, they went so late that President Biden's speech lasted well past midnight on the East Coast. So the idea there is obviously you want to get the most eyes, most people watching TV in prime time before they go to bed.
On the East Coast,
but,
yeah.
You're right. You had so many people, so many speakers that just took so long. The applause, yes, getting up and down, and the 4 minutes of a standing ovation as Joe Biden took the stage, that all contributes to it. But I think what really the problem was is that the speakers went far longer than they should have gone.
I heard Hillary Clinton's speech was excessively long.
I think she had a real tough time. She just wanted to hold on to that spotlight here at the DNC as long as she could.
There it is.
The other one that went really long, too, was Senator Raphael Warnock of Georgia, who also happens to be a reverend. So
comes with
Southern
the territory.
Preacher,
he, yeah, you
exactly.
know. You know how to speak. You know how to take up time as a preacher. Sure.
And they weren't going to, you know, play him off because the crowd was loving what he was having to say. And he was one of the last speakers before they went to, you know, the Biden family a little bit later on with Jill and the daughter Ashley and then ultimately the president to round out the night. But the speakers went lengthy at times, which was a little bit surprising. I mean, you know, everything's always a little fluid on these convention floors, as far as timing goes. But I mean, you look back to what we had in Milwaukee; things were really kind of a well-oiled machine. They were sticking right to the script, right to the timing, up until Thursday night, when former President Trump gave his ultimate acceptance speech. That lasted about
really
an hour and 23 minutes, if I remember correctly. So, you know, long speeches, nothing new. It's unusual, but not out of the ordinary.
So, Jeff, I'll ask you, as the political observer in the bunch here, I caught maybe the last 25, close to 30 minutes of the Biden speech because I found out that I was going to need to take over and kind of help organize things this morning in John Carlson's absence. John Carlson's just out sick this morning. If you're just jumping in with us here to start the commute with Carlson. So when I got the alert, I was thinking, well, I better check in on this Biden character. And I, from what I saw from Biden's speech last night, fairly repetitious from, you know, the issues and the comments and the disposition of how Joe Biden feels about America and politics and Donald Trump. It's a lot of stuff that he's covered before. Was there any new territory that you thought Biden covered last night that maybe he hasn't delved into before?
Well, substance aside, I think the first thing you got to talk about was the style. I mean, you look at his performance in the debate where there was no teleprompter and how disastrous that was.
Okay, yeah, back to July.
June 27th, I believe it was, you know, early June. It's been 54 days since that happened. Wildest 54 days in American politics in decades.
Certainly but, in our lifetime, yeah.
Yeah, and his speech last night was full of energy. You know, it was typical Joe Biden of his earlier years in politics, hitting on, as you said, many of the same and familiar themes. But, I mean, you know, long-time politicians will tend to do that. They have their issues that they continually talk about. Where was he a month ago, 2 months ago? As you said at the outset, this would be a very different race if that's the Biden we saw in the debate.
So one of the things I wanted to check in about last night for the Biden speech, he was kind of obviously playing the hits, and you just kind of mentioned the energy that he had, and that was something that jumped out at me. One of the first things I scribbled down after just a couple of minutes of watching his speech last night, I was thinking, where was this energy the last 2 or 3 years? And all of a sudden it comes out last night when either, you know, the dance is over for Joe Biden politically. And I couldn't help but think Joe Biden last night was channeling the character from the Netflix TV series called Stranger Things. And the character 11, who kind of has this super extra human ability, and I kept expecting the bleeding to start coming out of Joe Biden's nose because he was expending all of his superpower energy in the speech last night. So anyone who's seen the TV show on Netflix, Stranger Things, you'll know what I'm talking about. But that's kind of the way it came across last night for Biden. He kind of harnessed all of his power and ability last night and kind of unleashed it on the crowd.
Well, we saw, you know, a bit of that back in January or early February when he gave the State of the Union. If you remember, what was the New York Post headline? He's alive after that. So, you know, there's two different Joe Bidens that we've seen in this campaign, and it's that one we saw last night and at the State of the Union earlier this year, and then the other one that we saw at the debate back in late June. So it's been up or down with him, but it was vintage Joe Biden, to say the least.
All right. Well, I think it was Jerry Seinfeld on the TV show Seinfeld that kind of said you want to go out on a high note, and All things being equal, I suppose that's about as well as Biden could have done in the overall. I've got some audio clips that I'll get to here a little bit later on the show of Biden. The one that jumped out at me most prominently was where Biden decided to get into a possible ceasefire and or peace agreement between Gaza, Hamas, and Israel. And what Biden said about the protesters outside have a point. And so I'll get into that here in a little bit. But, Jeff, any other major observations from you for last night's day one, night one of the Democratic National Convention in Chicago?
I think the major observation that I saw had to do with something that happened early on in the convention, before the delegates even came on to the show. Young Zach and I were trying to, you know, put together things, coordinating our coverage, where we're going, what we're doing, and all that. And he was going to, you know, set things up for a microphone and TV check. And turns to me and he says, as soon as this guy down here on stage is done with his sound check, I'm gonna you know, set all this stuff up. And I turned to him and looked at him and, Zach, that's James Taylor.
To which I said,
the singer?
Who's that?
not in your age demo, Zach.
Here he is.
No, not my...
Here we go.
Not on top
a bit of
the
sound check, guys.
Here's a fun little story about Zach and Phil. I went to high school with Zach's mom. I don't know that we've covered that on the air before. We've talked about it off the air a little bit. James Taylor from the 1970s is not in Zach's demographic, and James Taylor from the 1970s is not in my demographic or Zach's mom's demographic. So that even presages.
Okay, guys, he's in mine.
Bed. He's in more in Mark's demographic.
Jeff, and to you, Jeff, and to you and Zach, and people wonder about this, besides James Taylor, any celebrities, actors, TV people you're seeing or hearing that might be appearing?
I've not seen any sort of those celebrities just yet. I think those
no
might
Taylor
be
Swift
a little late. No Taylor Swift. I did talk to some Washington. So the Washington delegation, pretty interesting. We're up here in the press box, up in the kind of the top end of the United Arena here, the United Center rather, where the Bulls play, and I can look down at the Washington delegation, and we weren't sure that it was the Washington delegation. We're kind of off to the side, and I see these light up, flashing cowboy hats, and I thought, well, you know, is that I can see Alabama's over there. I wasn't quite sure which state had these light-up cowboy hats because they certainly stand out here in the arena. And I went down to talk to some of the delegates from Washington, and lo and behold, that's us down there. That's Washington State in these flashing light-up.
They better be LED. If they're incandescent bulbs, we're in trouble.
I think that'd be dangerous. So I go down there.
Hope
and I
those hats are flame retardant.
What the deal was, and they're dressed up as cowboy Kamala, it says, referencing the Beyonce cover.
Beyonce
they have
stuff,
sashes on. Yeah, so they're all in this cowboy Carter Kamala getup, which is pretty interesting to see from up here. But the one celebrity encounter, power couple encounter I had last night, I was down, like I said, talking to the delegates on the floor, and I got to make my way back to the elevators, and I see far more Secret Service than normal, and for around here,
that says something,
of
right?
Secrets. Mm-hmm. That certainly says something. Yep. And I said, let me just see what's going to happen because I bet this is going to be interesting. And all of a sudden, I hear him say they're going to come out this elevator, and it's just myself and two volunteers who are kind of checking credentials at one of these hallways. And so the three of us and all the Secret Service, and all of a sudden, Bill and Hillary Clinton come walking out. And let me tell you, everything anybody's ever said about interactions with them or meeting them is 100% true.
Okay.
She was exactly as grouchy as you'd expect her to be and not interested in seeing any humans. And this was no crowd.
Clear
this
the peasants!
Okay, question for... Okay, young...
Phil, I'd like it on the record. I enjoy my life. I enjoy living and...
Right.
If anything goes wrong, no, it wasn't.
It wasn't an accident.
Well,
okay, on a lighter side here, Zach, and of course, these are your first conventions. You were in Milwaukee, did a great job there. In fact, I was impressed being the first. I mean, everything you're doing. Of course, Jeff Poljula here with our sister station, Northwest News, just into politics. And boy, if there's somebody that can just teach you and bring you along the way, how would you guys, and maybe start with you first, Zach, because you're new at this, compare the convention there we had in Milwaukee, compare it to Chicago. Same kind of setup, same kind of, you know, lighting and staging and investment and feel and the energy, or is it a little bit different? I mean,
yeah,
if you compare
the two. It's very similar. Yeah, very similar. The biggest difference is there's far, far more delegates here for the DNC, which I'm told is common. For example, at the RNC,
all those super delegates they have.
at the RNC, all the delegation was confined to the floor, and the difference here is the delegation spills up into the 100 section all around the arena. So Washington's up, kind of up towards the concourse, right by a concession stand, but that's still considered the floor. Far more people, far more diverse demographic, a lot more younger delegates. That's one of the biggest differences. And in talking to a lot of these delegates, the energy, I think, would have been very different had Joe Biden been the nominee, but they're much more excited and feel they can kind of let loose and have a party now. I think they think they're in a better position and are happy to celebrate with their younger nominee. But other than that, very, very similar.
And okay. To that point, there was one DNC operative who was working to put all of this together here in Chicago. He said when Joe Biden was on the ticket, the mood was that the convention was going to be like a wake. Now that Kamala Harris is on top of the ticket, it's going to be like Mardi Gras, and that's certainly what it's been feeling like.
Something about that enthusiasm level. All right. Jeff Poggiola, Northwest News Radio. You hear it on AM 1000, FM 97.7. Jeff, thank you. And then young Zach, they're both live in Chicago inside the United Center at the Democratic National Convention. And you'll hear both these guys on throughout the week up to Thursday with us here on the commute with Carlson. And then, of course, Ari Hoffman's show from 3 to 6 in the afternoon. It's all presented by All Red Heating and Cooling. We thank them for making it happen to get Zach and Jeff out there in Chicago to report back to us. And then next hour, Zach, you have talked to some of the Washington delegation members, and we're going to hear what they have to say coming up next hour at 7:05.
I've got some pretty crazy audio I'll share with you. I didn't ask these people to say these things. They offered it up willingly.
Unsolicited,
so.
Right? Okay. So
I could not believe it, but you'll hear it.
We'll hear
it.
This is kind of eyes on the inside, a little bit behind the scenes. We'll hear what some of the Washington Democratic National Convention delegates have to say about how they see the world of politics, and we'll do that just after 7 o'clock at 7:05 when Zach rejoins me here on the commute with Carlson. Okay, boys, we'll talk to you 40 minutes from now.
That's good.
That's a wrap for segment one. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, just after 6:35, you're going to hear John Carlson's State of Chicago. And John picked up on this, talked about it yesterday, and then lo and behold, I wake up this morning, and the stuff that Carlson was talking about yesterday on the show, Fox and Friends was talking about this morning. So I don't know if they're listening to John's show or if what information John has is just making the rounds. But that's coming up here 6:35 at 6:51. Lars Larson will join me. I'm Phil Vandervoort, John Carlson's producer, along with radio legend Mark Christopher. We're both in for John this morning. He's just not feeling well today. He's a little under the weather, so we're going to take over for him. And we'll do the social media sweep coming up next here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Day two of the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. You just heard one of our day one wrap-ups, and we got some inside info from some Washington congressional delegation members at the convention who spoke to KVI's young Zach. We'll do that coming up at the top of the hour at 7:05. So be here for that. Lars Larson is going to join me to round out this hour coming up next. Coming up in about a half an hour here. I'm Phil Vandervoort, John Carlson's producer, along with the radio legend, Mark Christopher.
Good to have you here. We got you all covered, everybody. Not to worry.
Yeah, social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Zach was just making reference to being on the convention floor yesterday when they were doing the sound check for one of the vocal performances last night, and it was guitarist, singer, songwriter James Taylor. And on social media, one of the people I follow, who's an editor at large at Reason Magazine, captured the video from up above in the United Center of James Taylor on stage doing his sound check. And the editor at large for Reason posted the video of James Taylor and wrote, "Fun fact, this will be the 75th consecutive Democratic National Convention appearance by James Taylor." I don't want to say that he's there all the time, but I think he's there all the time. And then, of course, somebody got triggered in the comments thread and said, "The DNC is every 4 years. He's 76. What the bleep is doing your math, or who the bleep is doing your math?" It's a joke, dude. Lighten up a little bit, okay? All right. Here's another post about Biden preparing for last night's big speech at the Democratic National Convention. And I don't know anything about this person. The social media profile says passionate advocate teaching individuals how to learn about investing in the stock market. Maybe this is a bot. 37,000 followers. Pretty decent following on social media. Name says Ron Milner. Ron Milner posted last night, tonight at the Democratic National Convention, Joe Biden finally gets to feel like an American. Disappointed, betrayed, hurt, angry, humiliated by people who took his money and his job. And I thought that was pretty good.
I nailed it.
Pretty good play on how a lot of the voting electorate is right now and the disillusionment that a lot of people in the voting world, the people that are going to be deciding this election are feeling about the frustration of where we are economically and how we can't seem to get off this treadmill of being told, yeah, you know, things are better. Things are not as bad as you think they are. But man, oh man, when you have to start writing checks, start paying bills. Oh, you know what? This is a good time to bring out this one. I was going to wedge this in on yesterday's show. And this one goes to the heart of what we're talking about inflation-wise right now around the country. And I caught this one on CNBC. Have you checked how much you're paying right now for any of the streaming services that you like to use? Well, a lot of people are on
going up
three
pricing.
Or four or five, maybe, different streaming platforms. You got your Paramount, you got your Discovery, you got your HBO Max. I guess they just call it Max now. Netflix, Apple TV, if you got ESPN streaming, whatever, you know, your streaming platforms are. The CNBC story posted last Friday morning, it says streaming's getting more expensive. Consumers, here's why. The upshot is when these big media companies, content companies, started their streaming services, like right around when COVID hit, that was the time where a lot of people went, you know what, I'll take the plunge. I'm going to get this streaming service because I'm going to be having a lot of time at home. I'm not commuting anymore because of the commute restrictions and out of office working and all that. And of course, like any good business model, you start your price low. And then once you start to rope in your customers, and in this situation with the streaming platforms like Netflix or Disney or Paramount or Max, they start you off low and then they gradually start ratcheting up the price. And that's what the CNBC story is saying. So there's another example of how those cost increases are going to hit you. It technically may not fit into the definition of inflation, but it's costing you more money, which means you've got less money to pay your rent, pay your groceries, pay these other incidental costs. If the price of gasoline is going up where you live, we know it's been tough situation here in Washington. All these things factor together. So keep an eye on your streaming bill and find out how much more they're charging. Good morning, everybody. John Carlson's not feeling well today. He's just out. We are hoping to get him back tomorrow and get back to the full strength here on The Commute with Carlson. I'm his producer, Phil Vandervoort. Mark Christopher, the radio legend there.
Hey, real quick note on traffic here, and I know it's been a nightmare for a lot of our listeners in the South Sound. Highway 12, White Pass, is now finally open.
Oh, after the wildfire
closed
stuff?
With the wildfires. Okay. I got word of that from the weekend. So, again, Highway 12 open, though we still have fire activity there in the Rimrock area there.
Okay. In John's absence, this is something that came up on yesterday's show that I think is important for people to hear. Democrats are in Chicago for the convention this week. Last time they were there in 1996, Bill Clinton's reelection campaign effort. And John Carlson put together a compare and contrast about how drastically the city of Chicago has changed in that almost 30 years between 1996 and now.
That was when Richard Daley Jr. was the mayor, and Chicago was still a city that works. It no longer is. Let's start with the schools. The Chicago Teachers Union has 28,000 members. One of their former organizers, Brandon Johnson, is now the mayor of Chicago. It is a radical union. The head of the Chicago Teachers Union sends her son to private school. That's interesting, but maybe even more intriguing is that almost one-third of Chicago's public school teachers send their kids to private schools. Spending per student is now $24,000 per student. That does not count capital expenditures or debt service. That is a almost more than doubling in the last 12 years. So spending per student has doubled in the last 12 years. During that same period of time, reading proficiency for grade schoolers and junior high school students plummeted 63%. That's reading skills. Math skills went down 78%. Less than one in four juniors in high school can read at grade level. Among black students who are high school juniors, only 11% can read at grade level. Among students at large, less than one in five, 19%, can do math at grade level. Among black students in Chicago, 8%. Student enrollment went down 9% between 2020 and 2022. Spending, however, went up 35%. So basically, the more they fail, the more money they get. One of their high schools was built to accommodate 912 students. Current enrollment, 35. But it's getting more staff people, unionized staff people. So the total staff for 35 students is 30 staff people. One quarter of Chicago schools are more than half empty. The teachers' union wants them to remain open. This is the same teachers' union, according to columnist George Will, that wanted the schools closed during the pandemic longer than almost every other school district in America. The union also wants to stop and end the gifted student program that is currently the curriculum for 12 high schools. So again, this is one thing the union says, that you need to end the gifted program. It doesn't promote equity. Chronic absenteeism has been a problem. 4 out of 10 students are absent 18 days of the year. Among teachers' union members, 43% missed 10 or more days in the previous calendar year. Their new contract demands include 9% wage increases every year. They want no more police officers in the schools. They want a 100% electric school bus fleet. They want teachers, in addition to their wages and benefits, to get a housing subsidy. They also want every school to have a gender support coordinator. So that's just what Chicago's schools look like. Overall, Chicago's lost more than a quarter of its population since 1950. Their poverty rate is 36% higher than the U.S. average. The black unemployment rate in Chicago is the highest among America's 15 largest cities. Their sales tax is the highest of any major city. You know who's close to them? Seattle. Chicago's sales tax is 10.25%. Seattle's is 10.1%. By the way, this matters Illinois also has an income tax. Washington State does not. Property taxes have doubled in 10 years. Downtown office vacancy is more than 25%. Crime is higher in Chicago than any other major U.S. cities. Robberies are up 21% in just a year. Violent crimes in schools, are up 26%. Chicago's led the nation in murders for 12 consecutive years. But its arrest rate for homicides is lower than it's been in the last 24 years. That's the Chicago they are holding this convention in. While delegates are heading into Chicago for the convention, retailers like Walmart have left four Chicago neighborhoods. Just too dangerous, just losing way too much money. Speaking of danger, the 4th of July four-day weekend, 109 people shot, 19 of them shot to death. The weekend of August 3rd and 4th was more typical. 48 people were shot, five of them fatally. Again, this is Chicago. Everything they seem to be doing is making things worse. Not merely treading water and not making things better, actually making things worse. Their populations declined nine consecutive years. Education is as bad as I told you. Crime has soared. Almost half of the city budget, almost half of Chicago's annual budget goes to debt service and government employee pensions. So this is what government run by progressives looks like. There hasn't been a Republican mayor in literally a century. This is what progressive government looks like. What do you know? It's failing as much in big city, the biggest city in the Midwest, as it's failing in Seattle and San Francisco and Portland. Maybe, just maybe, it's not the people. Maybe it's not the geography. Maybe, just maybe, it's the policies that are resulting in these terrible, terrible effects and consequences.
That's John Carlson yesterday here on Talk Radio 570 KVI going through the dossier, the state of the city of Chicago. He pointed out about haven't had a Republican mayor in a century. Here's one other element to that story that John did not get into yesterday. There are 50 aldermen, what they call aldermen in the city of Chicago, that represent the city council. So the city of Seattle, for instance, has nine council members. 50 aldermen for 50 wards or districts in the city of Chicago. Not a single one of those 50 is a Republican. And the Democrats are the ones that are always talking about diversity and equity and inclusion. And they do not have any other political party diversity on their city council system, alderman system. And you wonder why they're in as tough a shape as they are with spending more and more and more and spending more and more and more and not getting better results. Rinse, wash, and repeat. John Carlson's not feeling well this morning. He's just out today. We'll hope to get him back tomorrow. KVI's Lars Larson is going to join me. I'm John Carlson's producer, Phil Vandervoort, along with radio legend Mark Christopher. Lars will jump in with me in a moment, and I want to ask Lars what he thought the most emotional part of last night's swan song speech from Joe Biden to start the Democratic National Convention was. So we'll get into some of those things coming up next with Lars. Phil Vandervoort, his producer, and at this point on the hour of the 6 o'clock hour, Lars Larson, our midday host, noon to 3, always joins us. Lars, last night, yes. All the attention on Joe Biden, swan song, final speech, probably the last really public thing we're going to see him do, I'd guess, after the convention last night in Chicago. Did you have maybe what you thought was a most emotional moment with Biden? I have one.
I didn't because I just looked at this as this guy gets a non-primetime slot from his own party. They have kicked him to the curb.
Yeah.
And so get up there, Joe. We owe you one more, but not in primetime. And then go away.
Yeah, he did get relegated last night. The most emotional thing I thought was at the very end when they walked out and they gave him the gold watch after his 40-minute something speech. The gold watch was a nice touch, but that shows you how classy the Democrats are when they shove you out the door.
Isn't that nice? But they do mention him. Have you noticed this in their party platform, which is runs to more than 90 pages? Mm-hmm. They mentioned Joe Biden almost 300 times.
Yeah.
They mentioned a second term,
isn't that wild?
And they mentioned Donald Trump 150 times, and Kamala Harris, their actual candidate, only merits 32 mentions.
Oh, okay. I hadn't heard the rest of those, but all the Biden stuff was cracking me up yesterday. Mark Lee Van Camp and Robbins, who are on after John Carlson's show from 9 to noon, they had that in their first segment, and I think that story was just starting to break. About the Democratic platform stuff and all these references to Biden still being the nominee that nobody remembered to take out after they shoved him out the door.
Donald Trump got half as many mentions in the party platform, in the Democrat Party platform, as Joe Biden. More than half.
All right.
150 times they talked about him. They're obsessed with him.
Lars, excellent stuff. And we'll be listening to your show noon to 3 today. Thank you very much for stepping in this morning, and we'll see if John Carlson's back to chat with you tomorrow on the show, okay?
Let's hope so.
All righty. There's Lars. Don't miss his show, noon to 3. We're going to get into more of the Biden moment last night. He said America is winning in his speech last night. I got some responses to that and what Biden said about a possible ceasefire deal with Gaza, Hamas, and Israel.
Oh, good morning. Welcome to 570 KVI. Mark Christopher here and Philip J. Producer. Got word this morning, John Carlson, a little bit under the weather. So we hope to get him back tomorrow, but not to worry here. Of course, we're all watching carefully here for feedback, results, and opinions about what happened last night at the DNC first night. President Biden, of course, with his speech there, an endorsement of Vice President Kamala Harris.
All right. We're going to do a producer's meeting here on the air. Hi, everybody. Thanks for jumping in with us. 7 o'clock hour here on the commute with Carlson. John being out today, and we're hoping he'll be recovered for tomorrow. He just was not feeling well last night.
Probably the whole thing going late, Phil. I mean, my gosh, those speeches, have you watched them? And it went late past prime time, four minutes then for claps and stand-up for
in
Biden.
In Chicago, young Zach, our KVI Eyes on the Inside of the Democratic National Convention. Zach, good morning again.
Good morning.
You sent the audio. Do you have the ability to play the audio of the delegate? Because I can't pull up my email in the control room here.
Okay. I don't believe I have the ability to, but I'll email it to Mark while we're talking here. Maybe he can play it. I talked to some Washington delegates yesterday while the speeches were kind of going on, and as we talked about earlier, our delegation was all wearing sparkly light-up cowboy hats. And the sashes that said Cowboy Kamala.
And those were a quick background. This is something that the delegates either are encouraged to do or they want to do. You show off the personality of your delegation in your state. And so, you know, depending on what your home state is, you do something that's specific and represents your state. And so this is what the delegates for the Washington group want to do to kind of show their enthusiasm. You know, the Republican delegates will do this. The Democratic delegates will do this. This is just the enthusiasm that everybody has for going through this whole process to become a delegate and then do the travel and be part of the whole process at the convention, wherever the convention gets held.
For example, at the Republican National Convention, the Texas delegation all had matching cowboy hats, and I think they had matching snap button shirts. They were all coordinated the whole time. So not uncommon to see some sort of group outfit.
Yeah, right. They coordinate
sort of things,
that
is what
way.
I'm learning.
Yes.
Yeah. I had a couple kind of crazy celebrity run-ins yesterday. Not necessarily celebrity, but high-profile politicians. And I tell you what, being the eyes on the inside, it sure is odd to be standing right next to these. You know, it's one thing at the Republican National Convention when they're people you've talked to on the air or that you talk about favorably. Mm-hmm. It's another thing. I was walking around on the floor yesterday, and I just, you know, it's super, super packed down there. And I'm just trying to make my way through kind of to get to the Washington delegation, talk to them, make my way just kind of around down there, because everyone's seated watching the speeches like you would at any sort of conference, but then you have the added presence of hundreds of members of the media. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just kind of standing, waiting to get through an aisle, and I look to my right, and here is Ilhan Omar, just inches from me.
Yeah.
What a surreal thing to witness. And I was going to stop and talk to her, but here at KVI we are many things, but we are not rude, and that woman was enjoying a hot dog, and I won't interrupt a good dog, but, you know, in Chicago, it was a crime. That was far too much ketchup. I thought she just had ketchup on a bun. So yet another reason to dislike her, I guess.
Young Zach, the things that you will come across. I have a slightly similar story from a couple of the previous conventions I've covered. 2004, Richard Dreyfuss, famous for Close Encounters and Jaws and Mr. Holland's Opus, amongst many others. And I know that he's probably famous for stuff even earlier than Jaws. But he was eating, I think it was either a McDonald's cheeseburger or a McDonald's English, you know, breakfast English muffin sandwich right out the front door of the Boston Garden, whatever the sponsorship now is for the old Boston Garden. And that's where the 2004 Boston convention was. And I thought, oh, there's Dick Dreyfuss eating a cheeseburger, eating a breakfast sandwich right in front of me. And he was just kind of hanging out. And I think a couple of miscellaneous fans were there chatting with him. So
we
now
crossed paths with.
Yep.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I was going to get into the delegate audio. We've got it set up.
Oh, yeah. Awesome.
So we'll have Mark roll it. But this is one of the Washington delegates to the Democratic National
Convention.
Fair warning,
it's a little loud. Just heads up.
Yeah, sure. Background situation. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's roll it.
So today we're wearing our keffiyehs to represent our standing, you know, and amplifying the message for ceasefire
on
for Palestine
brand.
And Gaza.
Nice.
And we're fighting for an arms embargo as well. We're hoping that Vice President Harris will call for an arms embargo as well. And so we're representing with our keffiyehs, and we're representing with our either ceasefire delegates T-shirts or Democratic Majority for Palestine T-shirts as well. We're all active delegates working within the DNC, and we're really focused on networking and recruiting more folks to, you know, join us as ceasefire delegates. It's been really, really positive so far. A lot of people are wanting to call for a ceasefire, so it's been good so far.
So tell me more about ceasefire delegates.
Yeah, it's actually a grassroots effort right now. So what we did back in March was we listened to Michigan and we voted uncommitted, and we were able to raise we were able to garner around 750,000 votes nationwide, which earned us 30 delegates. What we've been trying to do, though, is because over 85% of Democratic voters want a ceasefire, we know that there's an overwhelming majority of Democratic delegates who also want a ceasefire. And so what we're asking is also for Harris delegates to join us in our mission of calling for a ceasefire. And so since they can't be uncommitted delegates, since that's an official title, what we're calling them are ceasefire delegates. So they're also helping amplifying our mission for Gaza.
So when it comes to Kamala Harris, do you think she's the right choice for the Democratic nominee, and just you'd like to see her change some of her stances, or do you think that somebody else would be better suited for this role?
You know, I don't necessarily think it's about the individual. What we really want is any candidate who's going to call for a permanent immediate ceasefire in Gaza, whether that's Vice President Kamala Harris or somebody else. What we need is the ending of the mass killings of Palestinians. So whoever that is, you know, for the Democrats, we're hoping that Vice President Kamala Harris will work with us and meet us and talk with us about this, because that's why we're here. That's what we're fighting for, right?
Zach, great questions of that delegate. And, I mean, she's...
Talk about a one-issue voter.
Yeah, definitely that.
And Washington sending their best and brightest.
Yeah, she puts all the cards on the table that this is really not about
anything. I didn't even ask these.
Yeah, exactly. Almost everything that came out was unsolicited.
Yeah, and when I just started, you didn't really miss anything that I asked. I just asked why they were choosing to wear keffiyehs, and it sort of almost within an act of protest within their own delegation. That's all I asked. Yeah. And this all came out. They said the quiet part out loud. I guess that's what we get here being undercover.
And I think you kind of hit on it. This is the single issue. And if this is going to preoccupy or dominate either Democratic voters overall or just this smaller splinter, this is going to be an ongoing problem for the Kamala Harris campaign. And I know that right now the Biden administration is trying to work with Egypt and Qatar to try and get Hamas, Israel, other parties together on a peace deal. And one of the things I saw yesterday, and this might be preliminary, because they've had a tough time getting Israel and Hamas to meet up at the same time. It sounds like they'll kind of take part at different times, but not together in these ongoing ceasefire negotiations. It sounded like one of the reports that I saw yesterday seemed to say Israel was comfortable with the deal. The U.S. was comfortable with the deal. They were waiting to hear back from Hamas.
Which is really,
in Gaza,
you know, the toughest party to negotiate with, from my understanding.
Yeah, that has been one stumbling block before, where they were waiting on agreement and then Hamas wouldn't agree. And a lot of this revolves around what conditions Hamas is going to give back hostages. And as long as those hostages remain in Hamas custody, that's a thorn in the side for Kamala Harris. It's a thorn in the side for the Biden administration. And what you just uncovered from this delegate from the Washington group, that this is their big issue.
And it was wild to talk to these delegates and get that audio that we just played, and then to just walk down the aisle, just a few steps down, and then there's the DNC to hand out placards that said something to the effect of pro-Israel Democrat or something like that. So as much as you'll hear the news media saying last night was this call for unity and that they're, you know, this party's coming together, kind of what we saw at the RNC, I don't really believe that to be the case. You have delegates who are not really committed to the cause here. You have mass demonstrations outside. Shoot, the barricade was breached last night. Mm-hmm. So I don't fully believe this is a party that is as unified as some of the mainstream media might lead you to believe based on the speeches last night.
Yeah. Now I'll continue our producers meeting here in the middle of the show. John Carlson's not feeling well this morning, so Phil Vandervoort here, John's producer, along with young Zach, who's live in Chicago. He's our KVI Eyes on the Inside, and it's all presented by Allred Heating and Cooling. And then Mark Christopher's here with us running things in the control room. To continue this, have you been able to preview any of like the audio, the interview you just had with this delegate with Ari Hoffman, our 3 to 6 host in the afternoon? Because he's going to go
not.
Ballistic when he hears that.
I know. I'm very excited. Allegedly, mm-hmm. he might be back on the air today. That's okay. The plan. He was working to get a flight back. He was at a wedding and flying back from New York. So hopefully he gets a chance to hear it and riff on this later, mm-hmm. Later this afternoon. Okay. But we'll see. I have a little more audio I'd like to play in the 8 o'clock hour.
Oh, good.
We had some more delegates, once again, unprompted, actually touch on tampon Tim Walz. They bring that up favorably. So we'll get to that in the next hour.
They're appreciative of that. Okay.
They're appreciative. Sure. They brought that up, not me. I just want that on the record.
Yeah. Okay.
It is wild what these people are willing to say.
Yeah, Zach, excellent stuff with the information from that delegate. And again, this myopic, I guess, devotion to I'm going to just focus on it's got to be a pro-Palestinian, it's got to be a ceasefire point of view for how they're going to vote for president in 2024.
And that's one major difference I'm noticing between the RNC and the DNC. The RNC had shifted its focus to winning. It was less about individual issues, and it was more about we need to win. And it seems that many of the delegates, many of the speakers, many of the notable figures here are still hung up on certain issues, whether it be reproductive rights or Palestine or whatever it may be. People seem to just be hung up on whatever they're hung up on and are too committed to whatever cause they've decided is most important to them. And many of them seem to be losing sight of what would,
picture,
I would assume
so
be
speak,
important to them,
right?
Which
yeah.
is winning this election.
Or
despite what you hear on the podium, that's not exactly yeah. what I'm hearing out in the crowd.
Yeah, and I would venture to guess if you started doing some polling of American voters in a broad sense, the issue of the ceasefire or any sort of a peace arrangement between Hamas, Gaza, Israel, it's going to be a little bit lower on the priorities, but it's still probably going to be a top three or four and certainly a top five issue. But I think that approach from the general public in the United States is going to be a lot different from the Palestinians are getting treated horribly and it's the Palestinians who are being victimized here. It's going to be a completely different reason for sorting this out between Israel and Hamas. And to
sure,
go,
as that delegate said, I don't know yeah. if her statistic was right or not, but she said 85% of Democrats want a ceasefire, but I would imagine 100% of Democrats want to win. And like you said, mm-hmm. I assume that's pretty low on the priority list for them. I would yeah. imagine yeah. There's things that are much more important that they'd rather have all the delegates on board with and working to secure a victory than get so hung up on some of these overseas conflicts.
All right. Zach, we'll let you go. We'll let you get that other audio with the other delegate prepped for next hour. And at 8:05, we'll bring Zach back from Chicago, KVI's Eyes on the Inside. He's joining us here on The Commute with Carlson, and you'll hear him in the afternoons on Ari Hoffman's show as well. And it's all presented by Allred Heating and Cooling. Thank you, Zach.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Phil.
All righty. And I'll continue along with thoughts about everything related to Biden's final night in the spotlight. Because I think Biden's going to be relegated to the sidelines now going forward.
I heard, did you hear anything? Because you stayed up late and this thing went past prime time. Mm-hmm. I hear now he's just going to go to California on vacation.
I hadn't heard about vacation.
Yeah, but so, he was going to and just kind of watch things there and then watch, you know, the official.
Oh, as of last night to today, to today's schedule.
Yeah.
That maybe, I have no idea. I did not hear specifically one way or the other. This whole idea that I'm still so wrapped up in what I heard from that delegate's singular focus on how it's Palestinians in Gaza who are being victimized, and they are. They're not being victimized by Israel. They're being victimized by Hamas, and Hamas is holding more Palestinians hostage than they are anybody else based on how they administer their governmental control in Gaza. It's just so sad that, like the delegate you just heard here a few minutes ago from the Washington delegation, that they cannot see that distinction, that Hamas invites all of this punishment onto Gazans for how Hamas operates and how Hamas acts. And unfortunately, nobody within Democratic Party support circles wants to acknowledge that. They just kind of blindly pledge their support to Hamas. And Hamas is the one that's jeopardizing the safety of the Gazans and the Palestinians. This is one of the moments from Biden's speech last night that jumped out at me, because all the other stuff he said last night, 40, 45 minutes, however long he spoke, was pretty boilerplate. It was repetitious of all the attacks on Trump or all the platitudes that Democratic candidates like to give out. This is going to be too long to play here. We'll have to get into this at the bottom of the hour. But this is where Biden last night was talking about Gaza, Hamas, Israel, the ceasefire. And Biden actually said something to the effect of the protesters in favor of Palestine outside, the protesters outside have a point. And I'll play you Biden's comments, and we'll get into that coming up at the bottom of the hour, after we do the social media sweep coming up next. And coming up next, the social media sweep involves a guest that I'm going to bring on in John Carlson's absence at 8:35. The guest is a Republican state representative from Mason County who's got an I told you so when he was trying to warn everyone across the state about Governor Inslee's administration releasing convicted sex offenders into community supervision settings. And once those convicted sex offenders were released into community supervision settings, it turns out a lot of them ended up reoffending. And that was the warning. But Governor Inslee's office didn't want to hear it, tried to ignore it, tried to downplay it. So we'll explain that story as I sit in for John Carlson. I'm Phil Vandervoort, John's producer, coming up next here with the social media sweep on Talk Radio 570 KVI.
Chicago, Chicago, that toddling town.
Zach kind of acquired this audio from Chicago at the convention of the Washington delegate talking about the CAFIA protest and the singular concern about ceasefire between Gaza, Hamas, Israel. I got to hear John Carlson's reaction to that clip that we played in the last segment. Hopefully John is back tomorrow and we get to have him respond to that, because I think it would be fascinating to hear how John perceives that and reacts to that. I'm John's producer, Phil Vandervoort. The radio legend, Mark Christopher, is along with me. So we're holding down the program this morning, and we'll go back to Chicago for another segment with Young Zach, who's our KVI Eyes on the Inside, presented by All Red Heating and Cooling. So we'll do that just after 8 o'clock. And then at 8:35, you're going to hear from a Republican state representative out in Mason County, a representative named Travis Couture. And this is where we kind of combine the social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort with the interview that Travis Couture is going to join me for coming up at 8:35 this morning. And our interview will revolve around what I'm about to tell you from Travis Couture's social media account that he posted yesterday. It starts with a Seattle Times story that says Washington confined hundreds of convicted sex offenders, sexually violent predators, and then it quietly began releasing them. So that's the headline. The story goes on to say that one in four of those convicted sex offenders that the Governor Inslee administration released, 25%, one in four, ended up recommitting a crime. Travis Couture is a state Republican rep that I'll talk to at 8:35 this morning on the show. He caught wind of this Seattle Times story, and he posted the following. Blockbuster, part one article from Seattle Times on sexually violent predator releases. The Times brought the receipts, as in the receipts with all the evidence that things are not going as they were intended. And Travis Couture added, at this moment, I feel extremely vindicated in all the bipartisan work I've done in the legislature to clean up this system and provide real public safety. We have long argued and suspected that there are reoffenses, and one in four sexually violent predators reoffending is unacceptable to public safety. And he kind of concludes his social media post with this. Sex crimes also tend to be one of the most underreported crimes, leaving us to wonder, is this statistic, one out of four sexually violent predators reoffending, maybe even worse? Could it be higher? And that is something that we'll just have to wait to see if more people come forward with reports about sexual assault or being attacked. And if any of those attacks and assaults and those criminal violations come back to people who have been released from state custody by the Governor Jay Inslee administration. So please stick around with me at 8:35 this morning. I'll bring on the state rep from Mason County, the Republican state rep, Travis Couture, and we will talk about that. Ari Hoffman also picked up on the Seattle Times report about one in four people who the Washington state correction system has committed and then released from the Puget Sound McNeil Island, where the special commitment center was. Ari picked up on this, and he writes, Ari Hoffman, again, our afternoon host, 3 to 6 here on KVI. Ari posted, for two years, I have been covering the story about Governor Inslee, Bob Ferguson, the Washington State Democratic Party in control of the legislature, releasing level 3 sex offenders into unsuspecting neighborhoods for 2 years. The Seattle Times finally covers it and omits who is responsible for these monsters being on the street and reoffending. So the Seattle Times is obviously pointing to the releases at the Special Commitment Center. But this was all done at the behest of the Governor Inslee administration. And Ari Hoffman reminding everybody about that. Final note, as it relates to the social media sweep this hour, this is the latest primary election return result, the vote tabulation for public lands commissioner. The vote is now down for public lands commissioner, second and third place. The difference between second and third place is now 192 votes. Dave Up the Grove is the Democrat. He has the 192 vote advantage right now over Sue Kuhl Peterson. Kuhl Peterson, I guess. And at one point, Dave Up the Grove was up by about 5,000 votes.
Yeah.
It's so, down so to 192 votes.
And Phil, now are we in a territory of like a recount?
Yes. Now we're headed to automatic recount because this is so close. And John Carlson was saying, watch these next couple of days of mail-in ballot returns. The Republican candidate currently in third place will narrow it down. And John has been right on the money. It's as close as it gets, 192 vote difference out of each candidate. Each of those candidates has a almost 400,000 votes. So we're talking 1.2, 1.3 million total votes in the Washington primary. 1.2, 1.3 million votes, and the vote difference between two candidates is 192. Okay, let's get you traffic, and then we'll get into what Biden said last night in his farewell speech about the Hamas-Israel-Gaza ceasefire plan. Phil Vandervoort, John Carlson's producer, in for John this morning. Mark Christopher, the radio legend, is here.
Did you stay up late for the entire speech?
I did. I'm a little sleep-deprived, but I've been in worse shape before on the radio.
Past prime time. That was
so,
a late one.
Yeah, everything went late last night, but let's kind of jump to the... I watched maybe the last 30-odd minutes of Biden's speech last night when I found out late last night that John was not feeling well and I was going to probably need to take the lead on this morning's show and sort of try and be able to dissect a little bit of what happened with Biden. And the part that jumped out at me is what we've been talking about pretty much this whole hour. Started the hour talking to young Zach, who's our KVI Eyes on the Inside at the Chicago Convention. And he had an interview with a delegate from Washington State, delegate to the Democratic National Convention. And the delegate's primary singular concern was, we got to have a ceasefire and we got to have a president that's essentially going to support Palestinians. That, in summation, is what this delegate told Zach. And, you know, Zach was just noticing that this young woman had a keffiyeh on, which is a symbol for solidarity with Palestinians. And in this ultimate connection, it's a solidarity with Hamas, the ruling party in Gaza. And so in Biden's speech last night, he talked about this process that has been start and stop and start and stop and hasn't really produced anything tangible of a ceasefire plan between Gaza, Hamas, and Israel and some of the neighbors like Egypt and Qatar and things like that. So here's what Biden said about that process of trying to negotiate a ceasefire. And then Biden makes this comment about protesters outside, and these would be the pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas, pro-Gaza supporters that are almost always anti-Israel. They'll tell you they're not, but in the grand scheme of things, this is zero-sum politics. Here's what Biden said last night, and this was maybe the most significant part of anything that Biden said last night, certainly as it pertains to what direction the campaign for president is going to go in 2024.
And we'll keep working to bring hostages home and end the war in Gaza and bring peace and security to the Middle East.
So that gets decent applause.
As you know, I wrote a peace treaty for Gaza. A few days ago, I put forward a proposal that brought us closer to doing that than we've done since October 7th. We're working around the clock, my Secretary of State, to prevent a wider war and reunite hostages with their families and surge humanitarian health and food assistance into Gaza now.
A little bit louder applause for the help in Gaza.
The suffering of the Palestinian people. And finally deliver a ceasefire and end this war. Those protesters out in the street, they have a point. A lot of innocent people are being killed on both sides.
And that's the tepid applause. And he goes on to continue to talk about whatever his administration is trying to do as it relates to ceasefire. But he goes on to talk about the protesters outside have a point. And he's talking about the impact to innocent loss of life. And that I'd have to say did not get as big applause as some of the lines before. So is there a reality amongst some of the people in the Democratic convention last night that, you know, it's not as innocent as all the pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas supporters make it out to be? And to talk about those pro-Palestinian activists and protesters that Biden said have a point, here's just 8 seconds worth of a clip that I saw from yesterday's protest activities at the outside perimeter of security at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. And there were several reports of the fencing being knocked down by these pro-Palestinian protesters. It was a mostly peaceful protest as they knocked down a bunch of fencing, and a couple of people got arrested. It probably could have gotten much worse. It could have probably escalated based on the behavior. But listen to this 8 seconds of a couple of Palestinian protesters that knocked down this fencing. And then when the law enforcement people on the inside, there's somebody that's identified in a Secret Service vest. And then what looks to be several more Chicago police officers come up to this knocked down piece of fencing and are trying to get it put back up and put back in place. Listen to the comments from the pro-Palestinian protesters. I had to bleep a lot of this. You're a fascist piece of bleep and cursing out the law enforcement there. But that's the attitude. And it's, I think, we've had this problem with the really radical activists that are what you'd call the anarchists or the black bloc that like to hide among the more typical protesters. And that's what I think a little bit of that was last night, yesterday afternoon on the streets of Chicago, outside the United Center in Chicago for the site of the Democratic National Convention. So that's a little bit of what that was. If what happened yesterday with the fencing getting knocked down and a few people getting arrested is the worst of the protesting offenses, then I think the Democrats will have to chalk all that up as a relative victory for the purposes of their Democratic National Convention. Now, if yesterday was just the junior varsity activists showing up and that today or tomorrow or heaven forbid Thursday, the day that Kamala Harris is scheduled to deliver the big final speech, if the I guess I'm kind of jumping the gun, or maybe that was a Freudian slip. If the activists on behalf of Palestine protest and march and there is more damage, destruction, chaos, conflict that results from those, that's when we know Democrats are really going to be in trouble for how they're going to either respond to the splinter within their own party or how this is going to give Trump and J.D. Vance the opportunity to capitalize on this, that there are some really out of control people that are, if they're not directly supporting Democrats, they're directly trying to influence Democrats and the Kamala Harris campaign as we go into the general election. Now, the KVI text line, a lot of listeners jumping in with some good comments on the KVI text line, which is 206-421-5757. 206-421-5757. Feel free to use that. Text us your thoughts and your reaction about the show during the show. We're on from 6 to 9 here on John Carlson's show. Michael and Graham pointed out, last night Fox News interviewed a man on the street in Chicago that was protesting outside the DNC while holding a Palestinian flag. He told the camera photographer that every Palestinian supports Hamas. Great, great reference point. And this pro-Palestinian protester went on to say that there was nothing wrong with October 7th and asked the interviewer, the media person, to explain what was wrong with October 7th. And Michael points that out on the text line. We just saw that get replayed here this morning on Fox News. Fox News is one of the TV channels that we have on here in the control room as we run John Carlson's show. We have the sound down, so I didn't get a chance to hear it. But they chyron some of the information about the Palestinian protester, and it fit the exact description that Michael just gave. So Richard in Northern Virginia, a frequent contributor on the text line, he added about Biden's comments last night. And what I've been talking about in this segment for Biden talking about, well, we're trying to get the ceasefire plan done and get the hostages home. Richard asks, why aren't they releasing, I jumped the gun here. Richard's comment was more specific to what Zach, young Zach told us a little bit earlier about the Washington delegate that he spoke to, and the Washington delegate, I think I made a reference to a couple of minutes ago, being singularly myopically focused on pro-Hamas ceasefire and how the Democrats or the Kamala Harris campaign can benefit Gaza and Hamas. And Richard asked, why aren't there delegates among the Washington delegates that are in favor of releasing the hostages? And that is a very telling, revealing part of this equation as well. Zach spoke to this delegate from Washington at the convention in Chicago. The delegate is adamantly pro-Palestinian, ostensibly pro-Hamas, ostensibly anti-Israel. But notice that there aren't any delegates from Washington State to the Democratic National Convention who are saying, first things first, priorities first, we got to get those hostages released. There aren't delegates that are stumping for that or prioritizing that. And that was a great pickup by Richard on the text line, 206-421-5757. All right. Zach's going to rejoin us at the top of the hour for another interview with a delegate from Washington at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. So that's coming up next. And then let's try and figure out what's going on with tagging and graffiti in Washington, because the Washington State Department of Transportation can't seem to figure it out. But maybe we can help the State Department of Transportation coming up on the next segment as I sit in for John Carlson here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Feeling well this morning. We think he's going to be back tomorrow. We're hoping he's going to be back tomorrow. Radio legend there. Me, Mark, that's
legendary
Mark Christopher.
Lyric. He's got to be back. We have Mark
Doobie
exactly.
Brother. We're going to do the legendary
Doobie
lyrics
Brother
tomorrow.
Concert tickets tomorrow here for September. You won't be here.
Concert
for
tickets. We've got a Daniel's Broiler gift card to give out. I'm Phil Vandervoort in for John with Mark here. This story came up about the State Department of Transportation trying to nail people for graffiti tagging. So close, but not quite. Here's some of the Como coverage, Preston Phillips, into a story by Lynn Ann Wynn.
Watchdog cameras capturing a group of taggers spray painting walls along I-5 near downtown Seattle. This is one of many videos we've shown you of similar groups over the last couple of months along I-5 doing the very same thing. Washington State Patrol responded near South Main Street last night when taggers were spotted right around 10:30. But by the time troopers arrived, the taggers were already gone.
Oh, wow. Surprise, surprise, right? The state has allocated $1 million in taxpayer money to study video systems to possibly nab taggers. Do you think that's going to work? I mean, we don't have enough state patrol. We don't have enough police, in Seattle at least, to arrest people. And then Como talked to one woman, kind of did the man on the street type stuff. She gave the sharpest answer. She's probably smarter than Governor Inslee. Listen to this response of what she thinks could be done to nab the taggers.
Maybe they can have some cameras around when you clean up places and they put it back right around there. Put a camera there, you know, so they can detect who's doing it.
So essentially a sting operation. Clean up a spot, make it inviting for the next tagger to come along, put video cameras there. You video record them. It's like a bait car. And then, boom, you monitor that spot, you stake it out, and boom, you rush in.
No $1 million to have that done, Phil.
That's pretty simple. Here's the last part of the Como story after that woman.
And earlier this year, WashUt also launched a pilot program to use drones to remove graffiti from hard-to-reach places. But WashUt says, despite our efforts, no matter how soon after graffiti appears, removal has had minimal impact in mitigating the frequent tagging in the region.
And it ends up getting repainted after they painted over it. So the Governor Inslee administration, state DOT, can't figure out how to do this. You just heard that gal. She's got a great plan. Let's put her in charge. Okay. We're going to go back to Chicago with Young Zach, our KVI Eyes on the Inside of the Democratic National Convention. And then at 8:35, a state Republican representative from Mason County joins me for an I Told You So to the Governor Inslee administration, who have been releasing sex offenders back into community supervision. All indications are it's a pretty rough commute out there this morning. We've got wet roadways in a lot of places and just a lot of congestion. Thanks for joining us this morning here on The Commute with Carlson. John's out today. He wasn't feeling well late last night, so I'm taking over running things in John's place. His producer, Phil Vandervoort, here, the radio legend, Mark Christopher, with me in the control room and in Chicago at the United Center, site of the Democratic National Convention, our KVI Eyes on the Inside. Young Zach rejoins us. Zach has been talking to some of the Washington delegates about what their key concerns are, what their priorities are. And KVI Eyes on the Inside, Young Zach, and then also our colleague from Northwest News Radio, Jeff Pogula, is there covering it for Northwest News Radio, AM 1000, 97.7 FM. It's all presented by All Red Heating and Cooling here on KVI. We thank All Red for helping us be able to bring Zach to KVI listeners, both on John's show and Ari Hoffman's show in the afternoon. Zach! All right, third hour of the show. Thanks for rounding up all these conversations that you've had. The one last hour with the delegate who is very much adamant in prioritizing Palestinian support when it comes to the presidential election 2024.
Yeah, absolutely. And once again, thanks to Matt and Dan for turning this all blue convention, all red.
I see what you did there.
Waiting to slip that in there. But yeah, I mean, and worth noting about all this delegate audio. Last night I was down there collecting that all for our sister station, Northwest News Radio. Okay. I wasn't prompting these delegates in any sort of, I wasn't seeking these sort of outlandish answers. This is what they're offering up to the to the mainstream media.
So this, I think, is how we explain this. It's all kind of happening organically when you're ending up having these conversations with some of the representatives from the Washington delegation.
That's the beauty of being sort of undercover eyes on the inside. They feel comfortable. They're happy to speak their mind. Say the quiet part out loud, as the kids say.
So let's go with two different clips. This is two different clips, but from the same delegate?
Two different delegates I spoke.
They were talking about the same thing.
Yeah, I interviewed them at the same time. Governor Tim Walz had just popped out right where the Washington delegation was sitting, so that's why we started talking about him. And they just shared some of their thoughts on how they felt he was as the nominee for vice president.
Right, and how it revolves around his track record as governor in Minnesota. Here's what the first Washington delegate said in regards to that spoke to Zach.
And he's just so genuine. I think that's what so many voters really want. They want to see themselves in the people that are our leaders. And I think people miss having a dad, like, you know, having family in office again. We can't go back. We can't go back to fear and scary times. So, I'm just excited for the joy that Walz brings.
Okay. That seems pretty on par with what Tim Walz brings to the ticket, right? It's a little odd about the family and the White
House. Get Joe Biden out of there. It's time for a dad.
Yeah. I don't know. You both see yourselves? Like she was saying, everybody wants to see themselves, like the person they are favoring here for maybe a vice president position.
I hate to break it to her that Tim Walz won't get to be at the White House with his family. I mean, they might come for a visit, but
bad news about Donald Trump as well.
Exactly. He did not have family at the White House at all. Did he? Now, there is a second clip, and this one gets into more of the specifics of one of the things
Tim Walz a little more out
did.
There.
As governor in Minnesota, that a lot of the activist types on the Democratic side of the political spectrum are really happy about with Tim Walz. Here's that clip.
His record is very progressive as well. As you know, in Washington State, we are like the state for so many other states to model from. He is walking that walk. I mean, tampons in the schools, reproductive health, kids having free lunch. Like, I'm sorry to say it, that's a progressive idea of people eating, children eating, but he stands that ground, and I really respect him for that.
So tampons in the schools, in the school bathrooms, was ahead of reproductive rights for that particular voter, that particular delegate.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. These are the memes we make about the left. Yeah. And, I mean, admittedly, these are pretty far stretches for the right to make. And apparently it's not, I guess. I don't know. I thought we were kind of tugging at strings, and wouldn't you know it? That's what they really think.
You sat down basically with three delegates from Washington, and some of the key priorities have been family figure for Tim Walz being added to the ticket as a vice presidential candidate, support for Palestinian state and or Hamas being a priority for the 2024 campaign from the one last hour, and then this one about tampons in schools, and then I just kind of shake my head every time I hear it, but this repetitive phrase of free lunch. It's not free. It's not free. You can keep calling it free. It's not free. It's subsidized. If the money for the program, for the lunch at school and the breakfast at school is coming from private charity, then we can call it free. But if it's coming from taxpayer money, it's subsidized. It's like the affordable housing. Well, Washington wants to get more affordable housing. Seattle needs more affordable housing. Okay, if taxpayers are paying for it, it's not affordable. It's subsidized. Now, Amazon, I'm just watching on one of the monitors here in the control room as we run the show. The sound is down, but we kind of keep an eye on different news outlets. And one of the monitors is on Fox 13 this morning. And they just did a story related to affordable housing that was coordinated by Amazon that's starting to open up over in Kirkland, Totem Lake area. Great. If that's how Amazon wants to spend their money, and if it's only Amazon spending that money, then yes, you can go call that affordable housing. I don't know if it's specific for Amazon workers or tech workers or if it's available to anybody, but that's Amazon's choice. If that's how Amazon wants to spend their money, building apartment condo type buildings for people to have, a discounted amount that they pay for a rent or a mortgage or whatever. But it's not free if taxpayers are paying for it. It's subsidized. But Democrats never miss a chance, never, to say, oh, free school lunches for the kids. And if we want to have the debate about, hey, do the kids do better at school if you've got lunch and breakfast planned for them so that they don't have to worry about those things and their parents, their family, whoever is supervising and taking care of them at the home base, that's a debate worth having. But don't stand around and call it free when it's taxpayer subsidized. Kind of comes back to the free college tuition. Not free. But the Democrats never miss a chance to say free, do they?
No, certainly not.
Yeah. Annoying. Annoying.
One of the things I noticed last night, changed topic a little bit, Democrats are still really leaning heavy into COVID. That is what they were really holding up as a giant victory last night. And I was kind of surprised that of all the issues going on in the country right now, that that's still what they choose to go back to.
Yeah. And that probably, goes to just the bubble that so many Democrats live within, that they don't translate any of their primary concerns outside of their immediate circumstance. And they don't see any of that. They don't diversity or equity or inclusion, any of those things, to people that might not be in their bubble, do they?
I mean, you've had the White House for 4 years, and yet you go back to something that happened pretty much 4 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no other success that they can lean on here, and that was pretty shocking to me.
Yeah, I ran out of time to ask Lars about this, Zach. Young Zach, our KVI Eyes on the Inside at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. And it relates to something that came up in Biden's speech last night. But Zach is there, and he's kind of our insider here during the Democratic National Convention on KVI, and it's all presented by All Red Heating and Cooling. And Biden had this line in the speech last night praising Kamala Harris, and he said she's tough, she has enormous integrity. He listed off some other generous compliments to her. And I thought, Joe Biden says these nice things about Kamala Harris, totally expected, not out of the ordinary. But if those things are all the case, Joe, why did she flame out so quickly in the 2020 primary season? And it started to make me think, and this is something I was going to try and bring up with Lars Larson a little bit earlier as I'm sitting in for John Carlson, and we didn't have enough time. But I'll ask you, Zach, what do you think would be some of the best aspects, the best reasons to vote for Kamala Harris? What are her strengths for you?
Her, I think her strength is that she's not Donald Trump. I think that's what's going to decide this election. I think that's really all that matters, is that she is going to win that anybody but Trump vote in a way that Biden was starting to lose.
You bet. And that was one of the two things that popped into my mind. If we have to talk about Kamala Harris, what are her strengths? One is she's not Donald Trump. And
you know, I didn't send you guys that.
Yeah.
I didn't send you guys that audio, but I talked to one Washington delegate last night who I asked. I said, you know, when you were selected as a delegate, I assume you came thinking you were going to come and cast your vote for Biden. And then to have it switch to Kamala, what are your thoughts on that? And of course, she was very excited and you know, super enthusiastic. And I said, well, was that your thought 4 years ago when she was running? Were you this excited for Kamala Harris then and kind of tripped her up and got out of a couple delegates that they had to think about it and were pretty honest that Kamala was not their first choice 4 years ago, and it doesn't seem like much has changed as far as her performance. Wow. They're just excited, given essentially the two choices between President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris, that's who they'd rather go with. I asked if there was you know, anybody aside from her that they would have preferred take that spot, and no real answer from that, but certainly a change in tune from 4 years ago.
Yeah, and I think the other I think strength or the big appeal for Kamala Harris in 2024, along with not being Trump, the most likely reasons to vote for her, her personal heritage of her mom and dad, biracial, Jamaican, South Asian. She's a person of color. I think that's the other big benefit for her candidacy. Now, her work as a prosecutor, I suppose they're certainly going to talk about that a lot. There's a drawback to talking about some of it because her track record of jailing people and imprisoning people is something that the Democrats don't want to be known for, because they seem to like the idea of, well, we don't really want to incarcerate people. We don't really want to jail people. We really don't want to enforce punishment on people who break the law and violate the law. So that's an ongoing problem for Democrats. But those are really the three main strengths for her campaign. Now, she has a bunch of liabilities.
And to the credit of the Democrats here, I think they made the right move last night, with the exception of Hillary Clinton.
Taking up so much
Vice
time
President
speaking.
Kamala Harris's her demographic qualities were not leaned on as much as I thought they were going to be. There were certainly a lot of talk of her as a prosecutor. They had some of her childhood best friends up to talk about their experiences of Kamala as a child. Mm-hmm. I think they probably made the right move and strayed away from that a little bit up front. Like I said, with the exception of Hillary Clinton, who essentially, my takeaway was, go ahead and vote a woman in so now we can vote women in on a go forward.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which was essentially what I took from her speech.
And that was the cornerstone of Hillary Clinton's attempt to run for president, was vote for me. I'll be the first woman to be president.
And that worked out so well, didn't it?
Right, exactly. So
that, yeah, she said something to the effect of, if we knock down this barrier for one, we can knock down this barrier for all. Whereas many of the other keynote speakers said, elect this woman because she's the right candidate, which was probably the right direction to go.
Yeah. Well, very good. That was one of the other things that jumped out at me from last night's Biden speech as well. And then did I mention that Biden said America's winning? Did we cover that one? Did you and I bring that one up yet?
Yeah,
Biden said America is winning last night. And my first thought, and he went on to cite a bunch, these crime stats are down. And I know that technically speaking, for 6 months, maybe, if they're really lucky, maybe in the last 8 months, some of these stats might technically be down in some cases. They're not down in all areas. And Seattle's, you know, still got its share of crime problems that get a disproportionate amount of attention. But Biden says America's winning last night, and he goes into these, crime stats aren't as bad as everyone wants to say they are.
Chicago, 12 years, they just announced.
Yeah, I know.
12 years in a row,
Fox
number
News
one for U.S.
murders. Was chironing that 12 years in a row, Chicago is the murder capital.
Which is never a good
capital
take
of America.
As a politician to say it's not as bad as you think it is.
Yes, exactly. Be
it's
careful.
Usually not the most successful route to take.
Yeah, be careful about playing it that way. And when Biden uttered this last night, America's winning, I kind of mumbled to myself, doesn't really feel like it. So, I mean, it doesn't feel like it when I end up looking at the choices I have on the shelves at the grocery store and trying to save a little bit of money on those things. It doesn't feel like it when I get my insurance bill and insurance has gone up because crime has gone up, and all those costs based on insurance companies are kind of coming back on all the insurance customers again, those sorts of things. And we're going to get into a crime story coming up at the bottom of the hour here at 8:35 as I sit in for John Carlson this morning on KVI. John's just not feeling well. He's out of the show today, but we're hoping he'll be back tomorrow. At 8:35, I'm going to talk to a state representative from Mason County who's got an I told you so about Governor Inslee releasing convicted sex offenders into the community for community supervision. And the Seattle Times has now uncovered what the recidivism, the rearrest rate, the reoffense rate is for these convicted sex offenders that used to be at McNeil Island at the Special Commitment Center. So that's coming up at 8:35 at the bottom of the hour. Let's see. Zach, thank you very much for all the work you've been doing there inside the convention, KVI's Eyes on the Inside, talking to some of the delegates to get their true feelings and their true thoughts about how they feel about the 2024 campaign.
Yeah, thanks, Phil. We'll hope to have some more audio. So I have a little more audio, delegate audio to play during Ari's show 3 to 6, and hopefully we'll have some interviews with a couple of dignitaries, politicians, celebrities by then as well.
Fingers crossed on that. Yep.
So
two great reasons.
Don't miss any of the special Eyes on the Inside coverage. Tune back in 3 to 6 for more.
Yep, like Zach was just saying, Ari's show in the afternoon, 3 to 6. John Carlson's show here on the morning, 6 to 9. And it's all presented by All Red Heating and Cooling. They're helping us sponsor this and Zach's coverage from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. All right. Up next, social media sweep, socialists on social media. And I've got a strange comment that came up last night from one of the undercard speakers. It's a congresswoman, a congressional representative, Democrat you've never heard of. But she said something in an attempt to try and disparage J.D. Vance. And I don't think it went as well as it could have been planned. And we've got a social media post from Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. So those are two of the things we'll get into. And then at 8:35, my interview with the Republican State Representative Travis Couture from Mason County about Governor Inslee releasing convicted sex offenders into the public, into community supervision outside of McNeil Island, and the reoffense rate, the repeat crime that's going on related to convicted sex offenders in the state. So that's still to come here on The Commute with Carlson as I sit in for John Carlson on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Hey, lots of clouds. Gradually going to start to clear out a little bit today, but kind of a gray start to the Tuesday here. John Carlson's out today. I'm his producer, Phil Vandervoort, sitting in. Mark Christopher, the radio legend here with me as well. The social media sweep, socialists on social media, sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Last night at the Democratic Convention in Chicago, what we'll call the undercard of the big speeches that go on. It was topped by Joe Biden, giving essentially his farewell speech. I can't imagine that President Biden is going to be in much of any media spotlight going forward now. Kamala Harris by Thursday is going to be at the top of the ticket in every official respect. And I don't think that there's going to be much more that we're going to see from Joe Biden going forward. All the attention is going to be on Kamala Harris, Donald Trump, and the campaigns against each other. But one of the undercard speakers last night was a U.S. Congresswoman, Joyce Beatty. And she took a swipe at J.D. Vance for some reason. And listen to this and see if this makes sense to go after J.D. Vance for this.
Left. Now, J.D. Vance likes to talk about how he's from Ohio. But as soon as he could, he ran away to Yale and Silicon Valley, cozying up with billionaires while trashing our communities.
Okay. So that idea of going to one of the most elite schools in America for higher education. I thought it was Democrats that were always kind of saying education is the great equalizer. Why would you pick on someone who aspires to go to what I think is in most respects considered a pretty desirable university? I wonder if for Representative Joyce Beatty, if Yale was her safety school. So like I said, and then, you know, Democrats love to bash billionaires. But I guess she didn't get the memo that how many tech billionaires are essentially either lining up to support or already in the pocket of Democrats. Because a lot of the gigantic tech people, particularly Silicon Valley area, they're not pro-Trump. Some are, but quite a few, particularly Silicon Valley, San Francisco Bay Area, all of that, they are supporting Democrats. So, like I said, just such a strange thing to get wound up about. And then I promised the one about Elizabeth Warren, so I'll have to save the one about Washington Democrats for tomorrow's show here on The Commute with Carlson. Elizabeth Warren posted this. The federal government must partner with local communities to tackle the housing crisis. I have a bill that rewards communities that lower housing costs, whether through zoning reforms or more housing near public transit. It's common sense. And again, I don't know how many times we have to go round and round about this. What is the federal government doing right now that you would say it's doing really well? And really, the federal government doesn't have a big role to play except for doling out grant money, which is more taxpayer subsidies. All the zoning stuff happens at the local level, unless you're Washington State, and then the Washington State Democrats in the legislature and Governor Inslee take it over so that they can mandate this top-down approach to zoning and what gets built or what doesn't get built. And if you've been around Seattle for any length of time, you look around and you see how long lots stay vacant or unused. I could take you on a little tour around Seattle of lots that have been empty, unused, or underused for 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 years. And it takes forever to get anything done to redevelop a place in Seattle. And now Elizabeth Warren is telling me that the federal government is going to come in and do a better job than that. Yeah, pull this leg and it plays Jingle Bells. All right, we're going to do a traffic check, and then coming up next, guest interview. The guest is going to be a state representative from Mason County, Republican state representative Travis Couture, and he's got some things to say about a new report that sex offenders released out for community supervision and sometimes not community supervision are reoffending, and reoffending quite a bit. It's a big I told you so to the Governor Jay Inslee administration. That is coming up next as we sit in for John Carlson on Talk Radio 570 KVI. And in governor's election here in Washington State, we'll get into this with a guest coming up in just a moment. I'm Phil Vandervoort, John Carlson's producer here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. John is out this morning. He was not feeling well last night, so he's got the morning off. We're hoping John returns tomorrow, and we'll get John back in the studio and talking more about everything that's going on at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. And the segment that we're going to do now, let's bring on our guest, state representative from Mason County, Republican state rep Travis Couture. And Representative Couture, good morning. This whole story revolves around something that you've been working on in a bipartisan fashion, which is trying to create some accountability for convicted sexual offenders if they get released back into the public. Tell me what happened when you saw the Seattle Times report about the reoffense rate or the recidivism rate for these convicted sexual offenders reoffending once they were released from McNeil Island.
Yeah, hey, Phil, thanks for having me on. Mm-hmm. The story from the Seattle Times, as you know, they did a very deep dive story. It's a very long story.
Yeah,
exactly. And they actually interviewed me for part two of the story over a year ago. Mm. And so I actually forgot that they were even doing the story. That's how long ago it was. But they put together data in this database that really vindicates everything that we've been saying, not just myself, but many members who've been threatened by the release of sexually violent predators into communities in my district.
And one of these big stories, John Carlson spent time talking about this. I feel like it was about a year ago, but help me out on the timeline if it was a little different than that, was a situation in Tenino. And then neighbors all of a sudden were finding out that there was going to be a building or a house of some kind. And it was on a sizable lot. So it's not like it was mixed in with a bunch of neighbors right next door, but a somewhat rural setting in Tenino, and that it was going to house a half a dozen or four or five or two or three convicted sex offenders who were getting released from McNeil Island. And the neighbors that were around there thought, whoa, 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 nobody told us anything about this. We didn't have a chance to make any comments or share our concerns about this. and the state was essentially just steamrolling this process. Was that one within the last year, or am I misremembering?
Yeah, that was near the beginning of 2023, so you're pretty close.
Okay, so a little over a year then.
Yeah, and let me paint the picture for you. I had just been sworn in, and not 3 days later, I started getting hundreds and hundreds of emails from that Tenino area. And what they were trying to do is DSHS was going to release 11 sexually violent predators into a three-bedroom Rambler in the community in the suburbs of Tenino. And there was no perimeter fencing, no cameras. It was next to a children's playground.
There was a park or something like that, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And many of the people, Phil, that contacted me, many of those hundreds of people were people that were going to be living nearby this home with no security, that were sexually assaulted or raped.
Yeah.
And so I jumped into action, the community jumped into action, and we got a lot of people to tell our stories here so that we can try to keep the community safe from these sexually violent predators.
Now, we'll move from there to what the Seattle Times story is saying. I'll read a section here. It says, the Seattle Times found one in four people that the state, the Governor Inslee administration, had committed and released from the nation's first program to rehabilitate so-called sexually violent predators have now been arrested for new crimes based on this Seattle Times investigation. So one in four, 25% reoffending some type of crime. It also found that 14%, one out of seven, offended in a serious manner, and some of those involved other sexually violent attacks. So, you know, we talk about this idea of how to make communities safer. The state has this liability of they've convicted somebody, they've put him into the special commitment center at McNeil Island in an effort to try and rehabilitate a sex offender. And then they realize, well, at some point they've finished their sentence. We're not sure if they're going to reoffend or not, but we're going to release them into the public. And this is where you come in. You've been trying to figure out, hey, how can we keep people accountable? How can we make sure that there's supervision if anybody's going to get released as a sexually violent predator or convicted sex offender from McNeil Island? Are we making any progress in that respect?
Well, a little bit. One of the things that's great about the Seattle Times article that recently came out and these numbers is that we only had anecdotal evidence, and we could point at case by case that there were reoffenses, but we were gaslit and told by the government that, oh, these people don't reoffend, nothing bad ever happens. But now we have the actual numbers that say, hey, one out of four is going to commit a reoffense, one out of seven, devastatingly so. And then there was another metric within the article that said over 700 times sexually violent predators and LRAs, they're going to violate the terms of their conditional release into the LRA and get sent back to McNeil Island. So these numbers are the true things that are vindicating our arguments. And I think these numbers are going to help us finally. It's going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back to help us pass these bipartisan bills to help reform the system so that we think about victims and we think about the community and we improve public safety. We make sure that, because although they finished their sentence when they got out of prison, and they're in McNeil Island under civil commitment, so they have to have some kind of pathway out of civil commitment because they do still have some constitutional rights. But we got to make sure that if they're released, that it's appropriately so, that they've actually done the treatment. And we've seen in the article that many don't even do the treatment at all and get unconditionally released.
Yeah, John Carlson's talked about that as well as it relates to King County and juvenile crime. The quote-unquote restorative justice, that the follow-up stuff is not even being done. We're talking to the Republican state representative from Mason County, Travis Couture. This is about what happens with convicted sex offenders in our state. And I'm Phil Vandervoort, John Carlson's producer, sitting in because John's just not feeling well this morning, but we hope to get John back tomorrow. Let me shed a little bit more light on something you just hit on, and this is direct from the Seattle Times story that prompted your comments, your, you know, expression of feeling like you're vindicated now, that all the things you've been warning the public about, there has been accuracy to where your concerns started. It says the Department of Social Health Services, defense attorneys, and prosecutors recommend that these convicted sex offenders get a conditional release. So they've got to meet certain criteria. Sometimes it's supervision, things like that. Sometimes it's in state-run transitional facilities. Sometimes it's into a supervised housing situation known as an LRA, less restrictive alternative. So that would be like a group home that you were describing in Tenino a few minutes ago. And the story goes on to say from the Seattle Times, Department of Corrections records show even the supervised release inmates have been fraught with problems. Dating back to 2016, 8 years, there have been at least 725 violations, twice as many as the number of people released conditionally during that time, resulting in roughly a dozen court-ordered returns of those previously convicted sex offenders to McNeil Island each year. A dozen get sent back to McNeil Island, and that's I think the red flag here is that you get a convicted sex offender and you can try and do various rehabilitation methods and strategies and programs and things like that. But for some, those rehabilitations just do not work. And once you release out into the public, even in a supervised setting, the propensity is that for some, there's going to be a reoffense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just think about it. If the red M&M in the bag of M&Ms was poison, would you eat a bag of M&Ms? Mm-hmm.
Just reaching, reaching in and grabbing a handful, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, with a one out of four, there's a 25% chance. And who wants to roll the dice in their community where their kids exist and where their and where people's wives exist around these people? And so the left kind of calls it NIMBYism, but I don't know of anyone in our state that wants this in their backyard.
Nobody in their right mind does.
And I want to just point out something that you brought up at the very beginning about the governor's race, the attorney general. The attorney general is charged with keeping the public safe from sexually violent predators. They're supposed to fight on our behalf to keep them on McNeil Island if they have not, in fact, reformed. In many of the cases that are being brought up by the Seattle Times and many others, the attorney general's office has essentially rolled over to allow these people, these sexually violent predators who have not reformed, who have not done treatment, who have a lot of red flags. And sometimes DSHS is saying, wait a second, we don't want to release this individual. They're not ready to go into the community. And the attorney general's office rolls over and allows it anyway. And so when you see the article where you have this stunning number of releases into the community over like the last, you know, handful of years or so, and a stunning decrease in the admissions into McNeil Island, it's very disproportionate. And the only two things I can think of is that either A, the attorney general's office is extremely incompetent about fighting against these people and fighting on our behalf in court, or B, they're allowing it to happen.
Yeah, and they're just not interested in putting up that resistance in that battle, right? And Travis Couture, State Representative Mason County in the Washington legislature down in Olympia, that attorney general's name is Bob Ferguson, who thinks he wants to be the next governor of this state. And that's why I think this story, the work that you've done to try and bring this to people's attention, is going to have, I would hope for voters, a direct impact on how voters see this. Jay Inslee doesn't get to run for re-election. Bob Ferguson wants to graduate from the attorney general's office to the governor's office. And I think this is as good a reason as any to impeach Bob Ferguson's candidacy to lead the state of Washington as the governor.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely it is. And we need someone who's going to actually keep the public safe, actually put victims and innocent people above the rights and the needs of criminals and pedophiles. Mm-hmm. And that person is Dave Reichert.
Certainly more so based on Dave Reichert's time in law enforcement and Bob Ferguson's just absolute inability to properly handle this situation for the safety of people that live in the state of Washington. Well, Representative Couture, I greatly appreciate your time this morning, and I feel like we've really only scratched the surface a little bit on how significant this story is, but just both from a public safety and a policy standpoint, And just set aside the governor's race, but there's a whole lot that needs to be talked about for how the state is going to try and navigate this problem of dealing with convicted sex offenders and what constitutes, quote unquote, rehabilitation. And then there's the supervision element of it as well. Keep up the work that you're doing on this subject. You deserve a gigantic round of applause because you are calling attention to this. Now the Seattle Times has kind of finally underscored what you were trying to keep people aware of.
Yeah, thank you, Phil, and send John my best.
Certainly will, and I think we'll be talking again soon before too long. Representative, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
All righty. Representative Travis Couture, Republican State Representative from Mason County. I'm sitting in for John Carlson this morning here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. We'll wrap up the show with Biden got a lot of praise, highly energetic speech last night, and he had some of his typical gaffes where he kind of crisscrossed things and stuff like that. But he had one other gaffe that really stuck out, and I will tell you, I'll play you that clip. It had to do with illegal immigration. We'll do that next as we round out the show in John Carlson's absence. It's calling me a hyena. Wrapping up today's show.
They plan to do this live at the concert, Doobie Brothers, Legendary Lyrics tomorrow. Win tickets, Phil, everybody, for September 6th, White River Amphitheater. Tomorrow morning, listen at 6.
This is a Doobie Brothers song tribute and done as a fundraiser for Lahaina wildfire victims a year ago. And we're going to give away tickets to the Doobie Brothers concert coming up. It's early September? Is that what it is?
September 6th.
And we'll do that. And the gift certificate for Daniel's Broiler gift card. And we hope John Carlson will be back tomorrow. John just wasn't feeling well today. So I'm his producer, Phil Vandervoort, in for John's place, along with Mark Christopher. So Biden last night, big adios, farewell speech. And he had a few of those moments where he kind of got derailed and mumbled and kind of lost track of what he was saying. And that happens with Biden. We've seen it before. But he did have this one, which I thought was a kind of another one of those primary examples of Biden just getting crossed up in the most awful way. Listen to this line he said about illegal immigration.
Kamala and I are committed to strengthening illegal immigration.
Kamala and I are committed to strengthening illegal immigration. No, Mr. President, you don't want to be known for that. I know you are known for that, but you do not want to be known for that. So everyone will praise Joe Biden and all the thank you, Joe chants yesterday. But there's a little bit of the Biden legacy right there. All right. Mark Lee Van Camp and Robbins are up next. They'll have their chance to weigh in on Biden's speech.